Good morning, and thank you all for joining us at Philadelphia Smart CEO's Think Tank discussion on anticipating and managing change in your business in partnership with Comcast Business. Today, we'll be discussing what Philadelphia area CEOs and executives need to know about change management. I'm Regional Vice President Faye Steiger of Smart CEO.
I'm Michael Wasserman with Comcast Business.
We are joined by a group of CEOs, executive directors, and executives who are winners of our 2016 Philadelphia Brava Awards. Let's begin by meeting our panelists. We'll go around the table and have each person introduce themselves, including your name, title, and company. And let's start with Mary.
Hi, I'm Marion Young, and I'm the president of Brightfields Incorporated, and we are an environmental consulting and remediation company based in Wilmington, Delaware.
Good morning, I'm Shannon Brewer. I'm president of the Wiley Group. We're located in Conshohocken. We help our clients with their wealth management, and we're welcome, happy to be here today.
Good morning, my name is Vivian Isaac. I'm president of Magnum Group, a full-service multilingual communications company. We help you connect and engage with your audiences in any language, in print, video, and on the web.
And good morning, my name is Marcia Zaruba O'Connor. I am CEO of the O'Connor Group. We are an outsourced HR and outsourced recruiting services company based in Wayne, Pennsylvania.
Good morning, I'm Catherine Siciliano. I am the director for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention for the Delaware and Philadelphia region. And our nonprofit organization is the leading organization in suicide prevention awareness and funding research.
Oh, I'm Michael Wasserman with Comcast Business. Comcast has had a relationship with Smart CEO and these roundtables for a number of years, and we're happy to be here and hosting and moderating with Faye. So,
great, thank you. Looking forward to hearing what you ladies have to say about our topic that's going to be very informative. So let's start with change management. If we can go around the room and kind of define what change management means within a business, and what does change management mean for a modern business?
Well, I think that change is really important in business. There's nothing worse than stagnating, and so we're always looking to improve and change. But without a more focused approach, things can become very chaotic, and so change management is very necessary to explain the vision, and then make a plan so that you can have all of the team understand where we're going and begin to embrace the change, because as we all know, people don't like change.
And that was Marion Young from Brightfield.
Shannon Brewer from the Wiley Group. Yes, I think as Marion just said, all of us typically resist change. So I think the first order of business is really to help people understand what the strategy is so that we can start to win their minds and win their hearts. Because without that, they're going to continue to resist change. We have to understand what's in it for them and then give them a plan of action that they can follow and feel good about so that they actually take on the change that's needed for the organization.
Vivian?
This is Vivian Isaac with Magnum. There's little to add, right, to the comments, but what I'd like to say is that recognizing change, when it happens, what kind of change, the ability to understand if that change is going to be a change that needs to be addressed immediately or a change that is happening over time. For me, that's how I look at change, to be able to manage it appropriately.
I think that's critical. I mean, I heard a statement once, the only thing constant is change,
right?
Mm-hmm. And we must embrace it, I think. Shannon, you said embrace it. I think that's a key focus, knowing that it's always there, whether you're driving the change, right? Or whether it's happening in your environment, so.
Marcia, what does change mean to you and your organization?
Well, I think there's a lot of excitement, but also a lot of fear and risk, because we're a smaller company, about 25 employees, and so we want to think about going up to 40 or 50 people. So there's a lot of fear going on because there's a lot of comfortability. And so it's basically getting everybody on the same page and understanding where we're going as a team, communicating that process, and basically relaying to them that everybody's going to be okay. Because there's always going to be that fear, is my job still going to be here when we're at 50? So I think that change is an interesting word. It's a very large word, but I think it's all how you manage it.
Very good. Kathy, what can you
Well, coming from the nonprofit world and working with volunteers, mostly an organization that is backed by volunteers, we have to look at the change and embrace it. That change could look very differently. As we look at mental health wellness right now, we're at that turning. We're turning that corner, and so you have to look at change, embrace it, and also feed it. And sometimes it may even look like breaking down the current structure and rebuilding, just so that you can accommodate that change, because change is good. That's where new ideas and new initiatives come into play.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the need to change. Sometimes you need to recognize it, number one, what Viviana had mentioned, but then the need to doing it. And the first step of change management is to recognize, as I had mentioned, and the capability for change. So how do you recognize the need for change before you miss that opportunity? Anyone want to jump in?
I think it starts by listening. That if you have your ear to the ground, whether you're assessing your client's needs or you're just being aware of what your employees are saying, and listen to that instead of putting your own ideas forward, hearing what they have to say. Sometimes you can cobble disparate thoughts and put them together to a new idea. A few years ago, we noticed a number of our clients, a lot of our clients are from the pharma industry, they were going through another transition. And I was talking to some of the employees about how my background in HR and talent management, it's too bad we can't offer some career coaching to these individuals and help them land into another job, since we're understanding, do they need to get if they lose their job, do they need a full-time job, do they need a part-time job, but based on the economics of their modeling. And so I started offering it to them, and now I do it on a routine basis, and not only for our clients, but their children. And it's a whole new service, and I think it's a very unique service that a registered investment advisory would offer the community, but it was because we were listening to what our clients needed at the time, and it's grown into a nice part of the business.
Great, and that was Shannon Brewer of the Wiley Group.
Kathy Siciliano, AFSP. Demand actually drove ours. You know, AFSP was never heard of, and then all of a sudden we became the leading organization for suicide prevention awareness and research. And what we found was we had a sitting board, an advisory board, so we really had to go back and get a working board. So after that process, it was nice to have a working board, but the demand continued. We experienced very rapid growth over a period of 5 years. So now we've broken it down and taken it into committees where we need more people. So welcoming that demand and that change and feeding it, I think, is really crucial to the success. And now in Philadelphia and in Delaware, AFSP is now the go-to. I mean, before we were banging on the doors of the media to try to get our point across, and now they're welcoming us and having the conversation with us. So grab that growth and just develop it and feed it.
Great. Anybody else want to input?
I think this is Marcia O'Connor again. I think Shannon had a good point about listening and all too. So one of the things we do with my team, a lot of us are remote, and so it's hard to really have a constant communication with my team because they're our clients all the time. So we actually installed an application called Office Vibe. And Office Vibe basically is a system that goes out to all my team members every week and just ask them random questions about how they think the company's going, where we're going, ideas and all too. It has been invaluable to me in regards to just figuring out how the companies are going, what we're doing, you know, what they're thinking and all. Because when you're a CEO, they don't really tell you what you really need to hear half the time, and you have to pull it out from other people. But this is actually a great application that's helped me to figure out where we need to change. And so that's been very helpful, but it's about listening and just putting yourself out there and being open and honest, because I will bring these pieces and topics up at our monthly meetings and say, I'm hearing you want this and this and this, so we're going to do this and this and this. Very helpful.
Very good.
I'm Marion Young from Brightfields. We constantly ask our employees what frustrates you, and then we make lists of the things that are frustrating, and then we work with them on eliminating the frustrations. And so these change all the time. As different things are eliminated, other things become problems. We also have committees of employees who have the interest and the aptitude to make changes in certain areas. And these committees kind of started ad hoc, and they've been working really well. So they come together to make changes in things like the technical approach to how we do business, the report writing format, They just did an overhaul of a certain series of reports, and everyone says, wow, these are so much easier to use now. The report templates are more clear and understandable. We have an equipment procurement and maintenance committee. We have a sustainability committee. We have an events committee that puts on great events. But sustainability, we have solar panels on our roof now. We do waste audit. Some people are encouraged to learn more about recycling and not throw everything into the trash. We have community garden beds outside of our building where people can grow food if they want to do that. And we have just started a food waste composting program. So all that comes out of the sustainability committee. So I love the committees. I didn't start them. People said, we want to get together and make a change, and I love how they work.
Very good. Vivian?
Yes, I was thinking, as these ladies were talking about listening, and I hear listening to your employees, the listening from within, and also listening what's going out in our clients' world, and that's where our focus is. We understand that one size doesn't fit all. So understanding and listening and understanding exactly the world of our clients. What are they going through? What changes are they experiencing? What changes are coming? What changes are driven by the economy, by new governments, by the world events that we're experiencing? All of that affects not only what we do for our clients, it affects our clients and how they reach out to internally to their clients.
Absolutely. So clearly an underlying theme here is about listening. Now the second part of my question is, once you listen, how do you have the capacity for change? You know, things happen so quickly that sometimes you may not have that staff on board, which is great. The committee came to you and said, let's do this. How do you show that quick pivotness and the capacity for change? How do you plan for that?
Well, in the nonprofit world, we will put out a call for more volunteers. We'll start reaching out to the different organizations that we connect with. We have suicide task forces in every county. So once we have a demand or an ask or a certain area that needs to be particular attention drawn towards, take for instance education. We advocated for House Bill 1559, which requires all professional educators are mandated to have 4 hours of pre- and post-suicide intervention training. And so it was great. We advocated. It was signed into law. Act 71 is now in Pennsylvania, and all schools are mandated to meet that. So what happened was now there's a demand for education. So you reach out to those fundraisers that are passionate about the cause and want to make change. And that's what we did. We put out an all-call. We had 70 people attend a seminar training on how to present our education programs in schools. We had to set up protocol because as a nonprofit working with volunteers, we created a Google form, request a program. Schools are going in, filling that out, and we have volunteers running the protocol that they reach out to the volunteers, schedule the volunteers to go into the schools, because one of the things that we pushed for when you're pushing for a mandate in policy is most mandates are funded. And our fundraising efforts provide these programs to the school districts for free. So we had to find a way that we could actually feed that growth. And that was one of the ways that we did, was just reaching out to all the volunteers, the people, our funders, our fundraisers, our team captains, and also any other organization that has the same mission in ending suicide.
Very good. Anybody want to add?
Shannon Brewer. I think the other thing to tie into that is about where people's minds are as if this change is going to impact them. And I talked about it a little bit earlier, but I think it's really important for all of us to break down the assignments that we're giving, the plans we're putting into place, kind of in a new way. And it used to be top down, you know, your boss told you have to do it. And I think in our modern culture, people are expecting a much more collaborative solution. And they're smart, I think, particularly in millennials, they're saying, I have an opinion, I have a contribution, and I want to be able to make a statement with that. And so if we don't engage them in that kind of conversation, they're going to be dragging their feet when it comes to the change that takes place. So I work for a company that did not adopt a competency of collaboration. I was in HR and I was trying to promote that as a theme, and it really showed that it was not the collaborative environment and change was really hard. in the Wiley Group, I'm very proud to say that that's probably one of our top competencies that we feel really good about, because it doesn't matter whether it's our administrative staff or the CEO, that we kind of all have an equal voice, and when we can get that alignment and really people can bring their best ideas forward, then you can get the change. And together you actually prioritize. We just did this on a project where we had two different things we wanted to do. And so the people that were excited about the one system worked on that one, and the other group went on to another system, and they were both energized about getting the work done. So I think we have to handle it a little differently, which is much less the top-down theory of before.
Mm-hmm. I like to piggyback on Shannon's one comment, Kathy, and that's the other thing too, is that you led with a positive. And I think when you lead change with a positive, mm-hmm. you get an entirely different response than if you lead with a negative.
Yeah, I'd like to add, Marion Young from Brightfields. I think that it's really important to help the teams break down the problem into manageable parts, because people can see the problem, but they don't know always how to attack it. And so we help, and I say we, everybody helps. It's not just the leader or the manager. We do Myers-Briggs on everybody, so everyone understands their own Myers-Briggs preferences, styles, and we know that certain people are better at quickly getting to an issue, and other ones are better at coming up with lots of solutions to the problem. But anyway, once we help break it down into smaller parts, then people can move along and attack a part and work on it, and there's forward motion. So if the motion stops and people are frustrated, that's bad, and if they can move forward even on a small part, everybody feels better.
That's right. Harriet?
This is Vivian Isaac with Magnum. For us, it's all a matter of scalability. How quickly can we scale without missing a beat? How quickly can we deliver what the client wants without them understanding that there's a problem, perhaps? We need to think on our feet, we need to act quickly, and we need to be prepared for that. And we rehearse and we behave as if that change was already happening. So when change happens, you already feel comfortable that you have been in that situation and you can scale up as needed.
Yeah. We talk about the change and bringing people in and being on the positive side. Change also brings risk into the organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's small, whether it's internal or external, you know, there's a risk of disaster that's very real for the business. As you're looking at change, whether it's with committees or from bringing the group together as a whole, how do you guys deal with that? How do you look at the risk side of that change?
Well, I can tell you, this is Marcia. So when we had brought a millennial on board, and you know, it was interesting because we were remote. We didn't really need an office and all too, and we were finding out that her enthusiasm was dwindling being at home. And it was really difficult for her to be in that kind of environment where the rest of the team was very happy.
Right.
So we had to come to this conclusion as to putting it into an office space that would make her feel comfortable but be along with other millennials. Even though she hates being called that. And ironically, we actually found we're part of a nonprofit out in Wayne, too, that they had needed, basically, they had bought more space, and they had said, and we said, well, can we rent that space from you? And so they have about 7 people there that are millennials, and I brought my millennial and her space and all, too. And now not only has that opened up doors because she wants to go to work every day, she's happy, she's energized, she's hanging around people her same age and all, too, but now my own team wants to hang out there now, too, when they have downtime and pieces like that, because they want to help out this nonprofit. So it's not only helping us in regards to getting our name out there and visibility, it's helping us give good back to the community, and it's also creating more retention for our team. So we had to change quickly. You could see all the signs that were happening. So we had to find that space, get things moving, get things going, and now we're doing it. We're actually going into bigger space, and we're doing it together. So it's exciting because it has grown from something I never thought before, but that change had to happen quickly, otherwise I would have lost some more people.
So that was change growing out of a problem that you were already having.
Yeah.
What about you change a system within the organization because of industry pressure or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Something that you sort of almost do a forklift in change. Talk to me about how you deal with the risk side of that for your company or organization.
Well, this is Shannon Brewer. Well, I'm the chief compliance officer for our firm, so
there you go.
So I think about risk all the time, and I think my constant conversation about process, I think, starts the tone of the organization. The other thing, too, is while I could spent a lot of time writing procedures and processes, I actually bring the team, and going back to what Marion said, I make sure every team member has a piece of that process so that they feel accountable for that to be done nice and neat. And then what we do is we kind of blindfold the rest of the members, and they get that procedure, and then they have to actually implement that procedure and see if they could follow it without any instruction. And so it's a whole cultural approach I think you need to take, that it's very serious. In the financial services world, thank goodness, there's always the attention of it is important, but we know that we have client data, it's very secure, so we have to spend a lot of time on those procedures, business continuity plans and whatnot. So it just winds up being an everyday conversation.
Vivian?
This is Vivian Isaac. So technology is a driver for growth, and we need to be up to speed and up to date with technology. And sometimes companies change their technology, and we have to find a quick way of linking to that new technology, understanding that there's a curve, a learning curve to know, you know, how that technology is affecting the internal team. Sometimes you have two technologies working simultaneously while change is happening. People are not that comfortable using a new software or new processes or procedures. So we try to make sure that we meet with our clients and stay in very, very close contact with them through that change, the change they're going through, and the change that is going to affect how we do our work, especially with confidential information. It's extremely important that all the risks for data security are in place.
Do you find technology helps or hinders that change, or the risk factors? I mean, does it increase the risk factors or decrease? I'm just interested because we've got a variety of different organizations.
It could be both. This is Marion from Brightfields. We're about to, we've invested quite a bit of money this year into purchasing a new financial software package and also a new server. And so we have a lot of change coming up in the next 6 months. And so the server will be installed. That should be no big deal. And then this financial package, first of all of our data will be converted over by the company. And then it will be a training process to teach everybody how to use it. And this will be the first time that our team has access to all of the financial data. So it will be great once it's done, but the transition will be challenging. And I guess there's a book that I read a while ago. It's called Switch. I don't know if you guys have read it. It's by Chip and Dan Heath. It's called How to Make Change When Change is Hard. It's terrific. I actually have it on CD, so I can listen to it, and it's great listening to it as well. But they have probably 7 or 8 different types of challenging situations and different ways that people dealt with getting through that. And so one of the most that stuck out with me is you take a small thing that's working and then you build on that and clone that. And so that's what we'll do. We'll have a small group that learns the system, mm-hmm. and then that group will help the rest of the team learn the system.
I just wanted to add, one of the things that's really helped us engage our employees when it comes to technology is we have them define the requirements, and even down to that granular level, and it really causes them to think about if the system doesn't work after it's installed, maybe it's gonna carry back to them in terms of, I didn't think of that, I should have thought of that. So it's really helped us as we've been introducing some new technology for them to do the requirements piece. This is Shannon Brewer again from the Wiley Group.
Kathy Siciliano from AFSP. My background is actually technology and business education, K-12, so I love technology. I do believe that it helps us work smarter, not harder. There has been a lot of change that has come down from the national office, and when you look at the way that we're structured, they come out with new accounting systems, and we're going to volunteers. We are constantly asking volunteers to do more and more for us. And there was a level of frustration there because you have accountants sitting saying, this is a great program, this is what we want to use, and we have to walk it into the volunteer community and get them to buy on. So we were struggling with that. We have 6 chapters in the state of Pennsylvania, and every single chapter was struggling with the financial piece. Mm. So what we did was we just pulled a PA delegation. We held it at the Crown Plaza in King of Prussia. We brought all the treasurers that were sitting on the board, and we sat down. And I was there to log on. We brought the financial advisor from New York down. He went through the program. And I floated as an instructor in a classroom, making sure that each and every one of those volunteers was in place. And I think when you make them comfortable and you walk them through that and you give them the tools for success, I think that technology does work, and they all walked away feeling very confident that they were able to fulfill this. In terms of change and risk, as a nonprofit, we're always creating the change because we want to make a change. And so when I think of risk, I had started a masquerade ball in memory of my son, and it started out with 70 attendees, and it went to 130. And then finally our publicity person said, we're either going to go big or we're going to go home. We booked the Lowe's Hotel, the Millennium Room, if you've ever been in it, it's huge. And I looked at this room and I thought to myself, how am I going to fill this room? That was risk. I signed the contract, I did everything. And needless to say, you know, you just keep pushing forward with that change and with the big picture in the background. We oversold the event, we sold 320 seats. So, you know, we're always in nonprofit, we're always creating the change. And so we just naturally assume the risk that's going to go with it and just keep striving through that risk.
As we talk about technologies and engaging technologies, as you ladies have talked about, you know, there's an inherent risk of disaster, right? So I guess I want to change the focus from all the positive things that happened to what happens when, I think, Shan, you were talking earlier about things kind of just blowing up, and then you turn around, you get it all fixed, and then it blows up again. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about disaster recovery planning and then implementing disaster recovery planning, just because technology, bringing technology into the game is, you know, something's going to happen at some point, right? Anybody?
Shannon Brewer again. I think it starts with really good planning. I can't overemphasize this enough. One very small example was when we made the decision to purchase a phone system and our internet. We could have had a bundled service, and we chose to go two separate ways. And sure enough, the phone system one day went down. Clients were trying to call in, having transactions. Most of our business is done over the phone. And it was really great to be able to quickly get an email out to people and say, we're here, just having a temporary problem with our phones, please email us. And then we used our cell phones to reach out to those people. And so having alternatives, again, that's the basis for any good business continuity plan, is to walk yourself through it and to test it. You know, it's one thing to also have it on the shelf, it's another to have it as a living and breathing document. And so making sure that you test your systems, whether it's technology systems or just other systems, you need to make sure you test them at least once a year.
Did you develop that but with the executive team, or was that
the whole organization?
Back to the committee, back to engaging the entire organization.
But you also, this is Marcia again from the O'Connor Group, you need to make sure that you educate your clients too. So we are basically a consultancy. So with the HR side and the recruiting side, both sides always require a ton of systems. You need to know those systems inside, outside, upside down. A lot of your clients and all too are so afraid of making that change because they think they're spending money for no reason, and so you actually have to write out why you need to be doing this and all too. They also get worried because of the fact that that information goes back into their servers. And so they don't like that, and they feel that's basically an infringement of their privacy and all too. So you have to do a lot of education to get them where they need to go, but also to show them the big picture. We have one client in town that's over 100 years old, and ironically enough, they do not have any kind of electronic document system. They are all paper, and we keep telling them all the time, the risk is humongous here. If something happens to this building and something goes up in fire, you are in so much trouble. You basically just will be bankrupt, you'll be done. And he was aware of that, and we were brought to his attention, so we're putting together a plan and helping him with outside consultancies to help him actually put something together so they can start doing all that. But he realizes it's not going to be a one-year thing. This is probably like a 3-5-6-year plan that we have to get moving. But this is where we go into companies and say, do you realize you're at risk? Do you realize you're doing this small too? All this information's out there. And it's amazing because a lot of times they just don't want to hear it. They know it, they see it, they don't want to do anything about it. So it's up to us, basically, as other business owners at all, to go out there and tell people, this is what I've done, this is what's worked in L2. It's scary, it's fearful, but you got to do it.
I think one of the things, too, is especially when you're rolling out, Kathy Siciliano from AFSP, is when you're rolling out new technology or you're bringing about new change, is to make sure that it's packaged and rolled out in a way that meets success. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people will come up with new technology innovations that they want to put in place without really testing the markets, talking to their field staff, seeing how it's going to impact their everyday interactions with their clients or the people that they're dealing with every day. So when you take that new technology or intervention, make sure that you've tested it, you've packaged it, you've bundled it, and it really is ready for a full rollout. Because when it's partially rolled out in pieces, I think that's where a lot of risk comes into play.
This is Vivian Isaac with Magnum Group. We create a risk analysis chart where we outline all the items that can go wrong and what happens if something goes wrong, who's responsible for making it right, or who was responsible for backing up, replicating, duplicating. We are very, very picky and very, I would say, passionate about backing up on-site, off-site. We're dealing with critical information, timely information. If we don't deliver to our clients, they cannot deliver in a timely manner. So we're in between, and managing that risk for our clients is really, really important.
So clearly, risk is important, whether it's your own company or from the people that you serve as far as your clients go. And let's talk about the communication of it and the planning of it as a role model of your business, and also what Marcia was talking about, their clients' businesses as well. What impact does your attitude toward change management have on the employees and the business as a whole?
I'll take that. Marian Young from Brightfields. Well, of course, it's got everything to do with it. Even if I'm scared, I need to be able to explain that in a way that's not going to make everybody else fearful, because people look to me to make sure that everything's going to be okay. And so there's plenty of times when I don't know what's going to happen, or I don't know how we're going to get out of whatever challenge we're in. And I quickly can ask my own self and ask the team, what is the worst thing that can happen? What else could happen? What else could happen? And so very quickly, it sounds like, Vivian, you've already got a list of all those things written down. We do for things like floods, like maybe once every 2 years, the road that comes to our building floods, and so we can't get to work. And so when we see that kind of a storm or weather pattern coming in, we'll make sure everybody has the phone tree ready to go, because the first person in will say whether we can get in or not, and if not, people are working from home. But really, what could happen? What are the worst things? So we do a lot of work. Our field is environmental. We have a lot of human health risks that are impacted with the work that we do. If we take samples and find out that there's an imminent health risk, we have to be prepared to explain that not only to regulators and the Department of Health, but we have to be able to explain it to people who don't have a background in that, and it's a very has to be done very reassuringly. We have to decide whether or not to take action. And so there's a lot of risk just about the work that we do for our clients, as well as risk in our companies. But getting more people on board, telling them the issue, and getting them to quickly assess what are the risks, and then we can make a plan for addressing each one of them, is the way that we handle it. And we have 45 employees, so I guess if we were a much larger company, we would probably have more processes in place, but we do it more as a group plan.
Very good. Anybody want to add how about communicating?
Kathy Siciliano, AFSP. My basis is volunteers, so I have to keep them engaged and on board. So anytime that there's change that comes about with either the structure of the board or anything that we're doing with our fundraisers, advocacy, education programs, you have to lead with excitement and enthusiasm. They have to believe that I think that this is the best direction to take them in attacking, whether it's advocacy or
getting a bill passed, getting people to come to our events. But in addition to leading with enthusiasm and excitement, you also have to have a step-by-step plan. When you're working with volunteers, they want to know exactly how is this going to roll out, what are the steps that I need to take, and even drilling it down to tasks, what tasks they can perform or get involved in to see it to fruition.
And I'll just add one more thing to that. Someone gave me a really good tip as a mentor a long time ago, and basically said, when you're the leader, never let them see you sweat.
Yes.
Period. And once you sweat, they sweat two times as much. And that has been like my secret, because they never see me. I'm always smiling and happy and all too. And they said, you know, if this world was going down, you'd still see rainbows, Marcia. I said, that's right. And that's how it's always going to be. So.
And that was Marcia O'Connor of the O'Connor Group.
Shannon Brewer, I just to reiterate that, you know, they are generally when a crisis happens, it's a very emotional state. And people are looking for how they can reduce the emotion and the worry. So if they have to worry about what you're thinking and not about the tasks at hand, it's just going to delay any progress you need to make. And kind of going back to what Marion said earlier, I kind of like about taking things and putting them into smaller pieces. You know, it's like the ocean is coming and you're just going to run, but if somebody gave you a glass of water, you can take that in and take it and drink it and move on to the next one, and becomes more manageable. So if you can communicate to them in a way that allows them to feel like they can do something as a result of this and keep the eye on the ball that way, then you can move forward.
This is Vivian Isaac. A crisis is a crisis. You cannot disguise it. Everybody goes through challenges, personal and at the business. It's part of life. So I believe in candid conversations. That doesn't mean that you panic and you pull your hair and you start running up and down your office. So having a conversation about what is happening, what could be the consequences, and how we're going to all pull together to solve it, for me, that's key.
So top-down communication, it sounds like everyone has to have some type of stake in the game so that ultimately the big picture comes out and executed properly. How about when you're talking to your stakeholders? Because they don't necessarily want everything from minuscule level. They kind of want the big picture and how you're handling that change. How do you communicate to them?
Yeah, this is Marion Young from Brightfields. First of all, I want to make sure that they are learning just as much as me during the crisis, because I want to make sure whether it's my clients or senior team leaders, the regulators, that they're there. They're not being withheld on information. So what I do, and I learned this from a seminar a long time ago, is communicate in threes. You have 3 points that you have to communicate, and you boil it down into three, and that's what you say. And then once those three are moving and you've given direction, then you come up with three more if you need to, or you stick with those three and then the broad categories. But people can't handle 9 points, and if you have to get things to happen quickly or get people to quickly pull themselves together, stick with 3 points.
Shannon Brewer from the Wiley Group. You know, financial markets can be turbulent at times, and so what we do for our clients is if we see a series of days where there's a lot of flurry going on, we'll just hold a conference call and we'll email all of our clients about what's going on about this conference call. We'll record it and then send it out to all clients for those that couldn't hear it, so that, among other things, but that's always like a baseline that we want to make sure that we get something out to them to encourage them to have a call to us if they have particular anxiety.
And this is Marcia O'Connor again. We send out newsletters once a month and all too about compliance updates and different things need to be aware of, especially being a business owner, which is most of our clients. And they love them only because of the fact that they don't know enough about them. They hear about it out there. They don't really know, understand the pieces behind it. And so like just one coming out regarding Department of Labor, which is a big impact for a lot of our clients. It takes effect in December. And we're sending them basically snippets as to what to do, when to do it, how to do it, communication plans and all too, saying we want you to be on board this because it's going to hit you like a pan in the head. And so they really appreciate that, but it's about communication and making sure everybody's on the same page. And also communicating and training your own team members too, because they're out at the client. If they don't know what they're talking about in law too, it doesn't make us look good together as a team. So it's really important to have that communication all the way around, from my inside to the outside.
I just want to add to Marsha, this is Vivian, that timely communication, not wait until the last minute, right? The early you tell your clients that something's going on and you're handling it, the better it is for them. Also, you're preparing them and you can all work towards a solution together.
Yeah, even if the news isn't good, make sure there's some news, right?
Yeah, and I think, this is Marianne Young, Vivian, to your point, when it starts to brew, it's often that we might be able to see it and don't wait until it actually comes to a full-fledged crisis to start telling people some things about what's happening and helping them to maybe reframe what's going on so that they're able to take it as a more more of an understanding.
As you guys look at the planning that you do in case of the disaster or unwanted change, somebody had talked about testing the plan before. Any experiences with that you can share, where you ran into a situation where you had tested and it actually helped the end result?
Yeah, this is Marsha. We actually put together a new time reporting system, and this is a big deal for us because you have people on my team that probably don't like technology as much as you do, and so you really had to hold their hands through everything. And we actually tested it with three of our people first and say, okay, we're going to give you a month's notice and we're going to have you handhold all your things, go through all basically all the loopholes and all too. And that worked out well, and that actually calmed down the other team members that were about to take it and all too, because they trusted, oh, you guys got it? Okay, I can get it. So it made that seamless transition a lot faster and a lot smoother because they trusted those three people as to if they can do it, I can do it. And that was very helpful. So that was that wasn't my idea. That was actually one of my teammates' ideas. And I just was like, that was brilliant.
Kathy Sisliano from AFSP, absolutely. That's where I started the protocol for our education programs to go into different schools and organizations that requested it. It was great. We were raising money. We were raising awareness. However, we were not measuring or collecting data on the impact that we were having on the community. So what I did for our chapter, and Philadelphia is a flagship chapter. We have chapters across the entire country, 84 chapters to be exact. What we did was we actually created a Google form, and we linked it to our website, and we were able to track and then put in additional information on how many people attended the training, what their overall reaction was to the training, and if there were tools that they could take it back into their community. And so just by testing it in Philadelphia, it has now become a program that the national office is rolling out to all 84 chapters. So I really do believe that when you build it, you do want to test it before you roll it out to the entire market. And when you see the successes evolve in your test market, you know that you're probably going to have a very good success rate on a broader scale.
Very good. So you had mentioned Google twice now. So things in the cloud, some type of technology to help you get through the crisis. What other resources have you utilized in helping you make sure the plan goes off without a hitch and it being seamless?
Marianne Young from Brightfields. As a small business, I like to bring in experts for guidance and reassurance. And one of the groups that I've really gotten a lot of help from is SCORE, the Service Corps of Retired Executives. And Brightfields has two SCORE counselors, one for financial, one for marketing. And we worked with our financial counselor to start the business 13 years ago. He's been a big help. And then during the recession back in 2010 and the winter of 2010-2011, we really were in a huge challenge because work just wasn't picking up at all. And we thought, you know, they declared the recession over, in Delaware, it didn't come back. Construction didn't come back, and many of our clients were not doing any work at all. And so we had to make some changes, and it was really hard. We had to lay off some people. We've never done that before. So we brought in our SCORE counselor, and he looked at all of our numbers and said, okay, you need to reduce your staff by this much. And so it was terrifying, of course. But he helped us to really get a grip on it. And once we could get a grip on it, then we had to make the difficult decisions. We had to communicate all that information. But he very much assured us that all we had to do was do this, and the company was going to bounce up like a balloon. And it was really hard to explain, you know, to certain people that they weren't going to be there. But it's true. That is what happened. And then we took an approach after that. We asked him to bring us a marketing counselor to just help us with ramping up. And then we made United Way type charts, like the big thermometers. We made two of them for every month. One was the dollars of proposals written and the dollars of contracts signed. And we hung them on the wall, and they were big. You know, they were the whole length of the wall. Every single month we switched them out. And then we said to everyone on staff, okay, every proposal that you think you can write, whether the client asked you for it or not, write it and send it. And then we're going to log it on this chart. And we had a goal that we had to get per month. And we did that. And in 2 months, we were aiming for $400,000 a month of written proposals. And in 2 months, we were over $1 million. Mm-hmm. And it took 3 months for conversion, and we didn't look back. And that was amazing. See what it takes to get everybody in alignment, and when they're in alignment, what can happen. But I think that the point of this was bringing in the experts for guidance, and even another business owner who has gone through the same thing will be very reassuring to the team.
I think that's helpful too. I think she's on the right idea. So this is Marcia again. So we instituted a scorecard, and that scorecard, and I'm very open, even with all of our financials with our team, even though we're a private company and all too, I want them to see where we're at in sales. I want to see them and where we're at net income. I want to show them this is what's going to cost us for all our benefits and all too. So we actually, it's basic, very simple. It's a red, yellow, green light as to where we're at, what we're doing per month, kind of a deal. And they love it because they feel very accountable in it, and they feel like they're adding value and they're starting to see it. And once, I'm a big believer, if you see it, you achieve it. And so by writing this stuff down and seeing how they're basically making an impact on things and where they want to go together, they're starting to see all that. And so they love it. It's very simple to put together. It's basic information about your company and all too. But like I said, we're growing very quickly right now. But I truly believe it's because we're sharing this information with our team.
Kathy Siciliano with AFSP. I found that bringing in professionals and CEOs to a board retreat. So we would host a board retreat and have the board members there. And they actually drove what they wanted to get to, what we were struggling with. They identified the problems that we were having in certain areas, whether it was advocacy, education, fundraising, sponsorship. There are huge things that we battle with, and what type of plan we want to take. And so by inviting a CEO or a CFO into our board director's home, making it a nice, relaxed atmosphere, they were able to break out into groups and really brainstorm and come up and have say in the plans. So bringing outside organizations into the nonprofit to kind of help structure the board and design their goals so that they know how to move forward.
This is Vivian Isaac again. So going back to how do you test the system? Well, we test the system, what if scenarios, for example. What if we don't have access to the internet? What if we don't have email? What if we don't if the phone system breaks down? And how much can we go back to the basic processes and manage those processes without those tools until those tools are reinstated?
Very good. Mm-hmm. Anybody else want to add anything? Okay, great. Well, I appreciate everyone's time and insight on everything. This actually concludes our think tank discussion. On behalf of Smart CEO and Comcast Business, thank you for your time and insight.
Thank you.